We're learning Michta Meliyahu, Volume 1. The Hebrew edition is on page 14, the second paragraph. We've been speaking about the topic is Schus Avos, the merit we receive from our forefathers, our ancestors. And we also mentioned it's not just from them, it's all those who lived before us, who have taught us in some way, and influenced in some way. So all that is called Schus Avos. Basically, what we said up to now is that the main schus, the main merit that we have from our ancestors, is the attributes we learn from them. It's what they achieved in their lives, so that sets our spiritual level for us. We mentioned the analogy is that a parent, the spiritual level of a parent will affect his child. So if the parent keeps certain laws, so the child automatically inherits that level. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have free choice, but he does receive the level of his parents. So the examples we brought here were the tests which Avram Avinu stood up to. He passed the tests he passed. So the passing of the tests itself was a learning for us. It was it was something that we received and which we now have as a inheritance. The examples we brought was when he passed the test of the Akedah, he was told to sacrifice his son. When he was willing to sacrifice himself rather than bow to idolatry, so that was an attribute we learnt. Right? The Jewish people are willing to give up their own lives for higher ideals. We found that even with the simplest Jews who were prepared to give up their lives rather than change religion, or rather bow down to an idol. Another example we brought was the fact that he was willing to leave his homeland, Lech Lecha, left his homeland to fill the command of Hashem, to go into a foreign land. And even though that was difficult, he was willing to, for the love of Eretz Yisrael, he was willing to follow Hashem's command, come to Eretz Yisrael. And we have that as a heritage. We have a love for Eretz Yisrael. And the third example we brought was the famine. He came to Eretz Israel expecting everything to be wonderful here. And of course it wasn't. And there was a famine in the land and there was tremendous suffering. But he never complained. He never complained once. And he stood up to the test, even though he needed to go to Egypt. And that was also difficult. He never complained. He never thought badly of Hashem. He never had an accusation. He never accused Hashem or was complained against Hashem. So that also is an attribute, the ability to stand up to hardships. Then, we went from that idea to the next point. And that the point was that all tests have an objective. What is the objective of a test? People, we're all tested all the time. We all have difficulties all the time. Each difficulty is a test. That's the way our lives are organized. We go from test to test. There's no one who has a plain sailing life where everything just goes wonderfully, but we all have situations of tests. So we mentioned the idea was, right, and this is what we're doing with the tests. We're also being tested, is that we should learn to subjugate our physicality to our spirituality, right? Because our natural tendency is to give importance to the physical world, right, that everything should be fine in this world. And then we neglect our spiritual heritage. We neglect to build ourselves spiritually, to serve Hashem spiritually. We're just so worried about, you know, the curtains being right and the carpets being right, and everything physical should be fine. And then we neglect right? And then the benching, we gobble off with a few short sentences. So we neglect the spiritual world for the physical world. And what we have to learn from tests, what the tests are here to teach us, that no. The physicality has to be secondary to the spirituality. We have to learn to cling to the truth. This physical world is a world of falsehood. It's a temporary world. It's not a real world. It's an illusionary world. There will be a time when we'll wake up to realize that this whole world is just a dream. This physical world is just a dream. So that's a falsehood. And we have to learn to cling to the truth. The truth is eternity. The truth is Hashem. The truth is our spiritual heritage. So this is really what we need to learn from the idea of tests. This is the next step. We have to understand that the test is simply here to help us to grasp this reality and this truth. And then once we have it, then we have the formula. Once you have the formula, so then you're guaranteed happiness. You've got the key. Once you've got the key to the safe, so you open up the safe, then everything is released to you. All of the blessings, all the heavenly blessings are released to you. Then we gave an example in the last class also of the two thieves who came before the judge. Right? Even though they both committed the same crime, we found that the judge gave one of them a very light punishment. He sent him home. And the other thief, the judge threw into a jail. Heavy sentence. A hardship, heavy sentence. And seemingly that's not fair. Why are they getting different judgments? And the answer is no. The first prisoner had a good home to go to. He had, if he sent him home, so the parents there would take proper care of their child, of the youngster who went off the path, and they would take care of him as they needed to, and therefore it was for his benefit to send him home. Whereas the other thief had no home in which to send him to, and therefore the only way is that he suffered hardship in order to learn the lesson which he would otherwise not learn. So the analogy for that is, the analogy of the two thieves is for us also, that sometimes the Hashem knows this. Hashem knows who of us are closer to doing tshuva, and that's when we do something wrong. So we have to correct it. Now some people within themselves, they're very close to doing tshuva. You just point it out to them, you made a mistake. They say, I'm sorry, yeah, now I realize I made a mistake, I'm going to correct it. But you just show them they made a mistake and they're already ready to correct it. Whereas you have other people who've made the exact same mistake. They say, that I was supposed to do that, and mind your own business and don't tell me what to do. So you have people who are very, very tough, very resistant. They don't want to do tshuva. They don't want to admit their mistakes. So that's how we see that sometimes these are the people, the stubborn people, the odd people have to get very harsh punishments in order to get the message through. They're not receiving. So the same thing is if you have a teacher in a class, the kid's not listening, so the teacher becomes more and more angry at the student. The consequence is more heavy. That's where we're holding at the moment. And there we explained, that really rachamim and din are the same thing. Rachamim is where you show compassion, and din is when you teach a person, you treat a person strictly, and really it's the same thing, because Hashem treats a person strictly when he needs to be treated strictly, and that is compassion. That's being compassionate on him, because it's allowing him to remedy his mistake. If you just abandon him to his mistakes, that's not compassionate. Let a person just get lost further and further away from Yiddishkeit, further away from Hashem, that's not compassionate. So therefore by being strict to the willful person, that's compassion, right? And by being light on the person who's willing to make changes, so that's justice, because that'll help. That's enough for the child, the individual who's willing to make changes, who's close to doing tshuva. So therefore, that's called justice. That is justice to set him right. Once you've set him right, you've done the task. Okay, let's pick up in the text now, on page 14, in the second paragraph. Kashes bore lanu kol zeh. Now, once all of this is clear to us, right, there are two different ways Hashem treats us, depending on where we're holding. Everything makes sense now. Everything falls into place. Right? All that is in life that seems to not make sense, that seems to be confusing, it doesn't make sense, it now makes sense. Once we have this formula, once we think in this way, we'll see everything works out perfectly. We can understand the greatness of the truth in all of the laws of the Torah, from beginning to end. Now, the laws of the Torah is not just the laws we have to obey, but the laws that Hashem, so to speak, obeys. Hashem runs the world according to His laws. And therefore what happens to us also is according to the Torah. We explained before that we inherited a very wealthy, a very rich heritage from our fathers. Right? We inherited from them attributes and attitudes and a lifestyle from our fathers. That is our heritage. And these are the personal strengths we have, koichus hanefesh, right? The inner strengths, inner character, strength of character, right? Different abilities we have in terms of personal traits. V'amidas ha-tevis, and good attributes, asher behem noichal yisrakez el ha-emes, that with these attributes and with these strengths, we're able to focus on the truth. We have the ability to see the truth. Sometimes we need to use our good attributes to see the truth. We need to have sometimes patience, or we have to sometimes be willing to humble ourselves. We have to be willing to submit ourselves. All of these attributes help us to our ultimate task, which, as we said, is to see the truth and to focus on the truth, to get closer to the truth, which is to get closer to Hashem. V'lamoid keneged hayetzra, and to oppose the evil inclination, which pulls us the other way. We have also a pull. We're being pulled towards physical gratification, physical world. So to be able to oppose that force that wants to pull us down, v'lachzor b'tshuva, and to get back onto the path of tshuva. Tshuva, by the way, means return. Returning means returning ourselves to Hashem. We're returning home, so to speak. Our souls are far away from home, and we need to come back to our spiritual home. And now we'll show a little bit more. We'll see something wonderful. This idea that we said is the actual schus avos. Which is to say the powers, the attributes and the abilities which bring us to schus. The word schus also is the word zachus. Zachus means purity. Zach means pure. So therefore, the merit of our fathers, the same word schus is the same word for zachus, is for the purifying of ourselves, clearing ourselves, cleansing ourselves, and becoming purer people. But this is the connection of strengths which purifies, which help a person to stand on truth, in other words, to recognize the truth and to stand for the truth and for justice. A person insists on being right, being a just person, a truthful person, honest person. And these are called merits, right? The person has merits, he has merits that he is an upright person, a just person, a fair person, a sincere person, honest person. And with that, we cling to our ancestors, as we're living our lives the way they lived their lives. So therefore, we're attached to them. We're following their ways, we're clinging to their attributes, so therefore, that's how we attach ourselves to them. And once we have within ourselves those good attributes and those wonderful powers, wonderful strengths, right, that Hashem will see in the great width and depth of His wisdom, He will see that we are still attached. The rope that links us to our forefathers, to our ancestors, is still intact. Right? And therefore we will choose the way of tshuva to correct that which we've erred. Right? We've made mistakes, where we've chosen the wrong path, and we'll make right our wrongs. So therefore that's what we're talking about. We're talking about having that connection, and therefore we could follow that way, right? If you have a string of boats and they're all tied together, so where the lead boat goes, the other boats automatically are pulled, right? So therefore, if we can be connected to our forefathers, then we can be pulled along in that path, the path that they lived, which was the path of the truth, the path of getting closer to the truth. So that we will be able to follow with that connection, we follow their way. Hashem, and then we will merit mercy, compassion from the right. Once we're doing it right, there's no need. You don't punish the child who's doing the right thing. You punish the one who's doing the wrong thing. But the one who's doing the right thing, you reward him. So therefore, we can also expect all sorts of compassion, all sorts of goodness in our lives. Because we have this merit of our fathers, our ancestors in our hands. We have this. We're following their way. We have the solution. We have the formula. And then there's hope for a very happy future. the schus of us. And this is what we mean, that we arouse the attribute of compassion, that we treat it in a kind way and in a generous way in the merit of our fathers. That's what we mean. But we don't mean that the merit of the fathers means the judge overlooks our wrongdoings. No, the merit of the fathers means that the judge treats us compassionately because he sees that we're on the right path. He sees that we're repairing. So he comes to our aid. However, if chas v'sholem, a person has lost his connection with his ancestors, he's not going in their ways and he's not interested in their ways, he doesn't want to hear about them, and he says, leave me alone, don't tell me about them, I'm not interested. And sometimes you have people who are so anti, they'll say to you, don't even talk to me about being religious. I don't want to hear it. Just, I don't even want to hear the words. Don't say the words to me. You're upsetting me with these words, right? So that's where the connection has been severed. He's not willing. There's no connection at all. So then, if chas v'sholem, if a person's in such a state, as einis oyis chas v'sholem midas harach midech zeh, so there's nothing to arouse him to make the changes he needs to get the compassion he would like. And that's what these sages meant when they said there will be generations, or there have been generations where schus ovis ended. And it just means that their connection ceased to exist, and therefore they didn't have that help. Lo alein, it shouldn't be on us. Hayoitze mizeh, ki aleinu ledavek b'midas ha'avos hakadoshim. Okay, we're getting to the end of this essay, and he's saying like this: it's upon us what comes out. The summary of this, what we've said, is that it's upon us to cling to the attributes of our ancestors. Right, whatever their attributes are, we have to follow those attributes. Right, midas ha'chesed, right, to be kind, the attribute of being kind to others, considerate to others, ha'emunah, trusting with the faith, good, believing in Hashem, midas ha'yir va'ava, the attributes of being God fearing, to fear Hashem, to respect Hashem, give proper respect to the religion, to the Torah, and the love of Hashem, to do acts. To follow the way of the Torah with love, to do it with love, to do it with our full hearts, midas hisraksus, yishoyef rak ela emes. And this attribute of focusing on the drive towards truth, that becomes a central drive of ours to uncover and to live according to the truth. Without allowing for the possibility of erring from the seductions of the Yetzer Hara, of the evil inclination, the seductions of the physical world, that we shouldn't get lost to it. They shouldn't pull us off the path. They shouldn't get us lost. That we will be longing for, to clinging to spirituality. Will it be paying for spirituality? And then, despite the smallness of our personal value, will bring into our lives the merit of the fathers. And as we attach ourselves to our ancestors, right? You have a small boy who's being attacked by his friends, right? They want to beat him up, so he runs to his father. He clings to his father's leg. So now he's safe. They're not going to come anywhere near. They're also scared. Right? So therefore, that's the idea of schus ovis. We attach ourselves to the way of the fathers, and that protects us. That is itself the protection. Hashem atoy v'snay gemanu b'midas harachmim. Hashem should treat us with compassion. Koy rachem Hashem es amoy b'mheirov v'zakei l'rois v'yeshuosu yeshuos emes. And so should Hashem have compassion on us speedily, that we should see the final salvation, the salvation of truth. Okay, the next essay, that's called Perik Beis here, is also a continuation of the idea of Schus Avos. So this is called Perik Beis, Madrega Hachiktana Shel Schus Avos. Right, the smallest level of Schus Avos. Right, we're starting a new essay, and it says as follows: Hide lefamim yechaber haodem elov ezedover. Sometimes a person attaches himself to something shelo yaved mimenu, that he doesn't want to lose it. Sometimes you have a certain item, and you attach it to yourself that you shouldn't lose it. And the way you attach it to yourself is with a little chain. For instance, a watch, a pocket watch. Someone has a pocket watch, so he doesn't want to lose it. So he has this little chain that he attaches it to his garment, to his vest. He has a chain that attaches the watch, the chain to the clothing. or maftechos, the people who have these key rings where it clicks onto, clips onto your clothing, mm-hmm. right? So there also there's a chain, there's a clip to hold it that you shouldn't lose your keys, you shouldn't lose your watch. Right? That's something we see. The afsha elo ishum to elis b'shal shelis atzmo. Even though there's no benefit in the chain itself is not important. Right? If I'm attaching my keys to my clothing with a chain, I don't need the chain. I need the keys. I don't want to lose the keys. So even though the chain itself has no importance, however, it has a function of attaching the item that I want to myself, and that gives its importance. So that this shouldn't be lost. So the chain becomes important because the chain ensures that I don't lose that which I don't want to lose. That gives importance to the chain. Otherwise the chain is nothing. I don't need a chain. I don't walk around with chains from my legs or from my arms. I don't need chains. But if the chain is attaching me to something important, so then the chain becomes important because of what I need to not lose. That even though the chain itself will have no importance other than this function which we mentioned. So all the more so, if we're saying that the chain is not intrinsically important, all the more so, one of the links in the chain, all the more so, has no intrinsic importance. Those little rings that make up the chain, certainly each one of those rings doesn't have any special importance. Mikol mokum. However, every single ring becomes important. Because if I lose one of those rings, so then the chain breaks in half. And if even one of them gets lost, one of them falls apart, so then the whole thing... So therefore, each ring becomes, even though, again, the chains aren't important, the rings of the chain all the more so are not important. But since the function is upheld by each and every ring, make sure that this function will continue, so then that gives it importance. Because even if one of the rings were to break, the whole attachment would fall apart, and the item will be lost from the person completely. Now, that's an analogy. What do we want to use this idea? How are we going to use this idea of the chain? What's the point of this analogy? Now, by this way, with this idea, we're going to understand what is the very smallest level in terms of the schus avos, the merit of our ancestors. Right? Where will it have importance for us at the very least level? We already spoke about how it can help us at amazing levels. It brings us to attach ourselves to them. But even at a very minimal level, the schus avos plays a very, very important role. So let's see what it's going to tell us. Haloi, hevtiach Hashem yizmoch la'avos hakadoshim. Right? We know Hashem promised our holy ancestors, right, the holy fathers and mothers, that the purpose of the entire creation will come from them and from their seed. Right? There's a purpose to creation. Hashem created this whole magnificent world with a goal in mind. The analogy you can use, a person opens a factory. You can have a huge factory where they have thousands of workers, and the thousands of workers have families, and all of those families are being supported. Right? They come to work every day, they get a check at the end of the month, and you have this marvelous operation. But the whole factory has a function. If the boss is not getting a profit at the end of the month, if the business is not producing what it's supposed to produce, so the whole thing will collapse. So therefore, there's always a goal. There's a goal that has to be met. Otherwise, there's no use. The whole operation becomes superfluous. Right? But no one's going to open a huge business just for the sake of running a business. This has to be a goal. So the same thing, Hashem created this huge, magnificent world. And the world has to have a function, has to have a purpose. Otherwise, why was it created? There must be some goal that needs to be reached. You know, a beautiful analogy is the idea of a watch. You can have the most magnificent clockwork or electronic clockwork that keeps the watch going. And it's all the different wheels and all the different springs, etc., all making the world, the watch go. But if you don't have two little paper hands on the which show you the time, two little pieces of strips of cardboard which move around, so the whole watch becomes, if those strips of cardboard which tell you the time, the hour hand and the minute hand fall off, so the whole watch becomes useless. It's an expensive watch, but if it's not serving a function, so it becomes useless. So the same thing with creation. And our forefathers, our ancestors, were the ones who were promised that the goal of creation, the whole function of creation, would come from them and their children. From them and their children. The kol ha'osif ha'godl, and all of the great future. Because it's a huge, right? You don't do something normally unless the profit you anticipate is greater than the investment. You don't invest unless you expect to make a profit. So the great future of this world, right, this magnificent world, what's it going to lead to, the culmination of this world, the goal of this world, this great future, Asher Yisgadel Viskadish Moshe LaKodesh Bochu Le'en Kol, where Hashem's name will be elevated and sanctified before the whole world. The whole world means all of the spiritual worlds as well, all the angels, all the different halls, right, which create the whole creation. So the final sanctification and glorification of Hashem's name, when Hashem will be totally revealed, right? At the moment Hashem is hidden, but when Hashem will become totally revealed, and not just to individuals, but to the entire world, so that's going to happen by way of Mashiach, who is a descendant of the Avos, who is a descendant of the patriarchs, the patriarchs and the matriarchs. However, from Avram Avinu, who started all of this off, until generation of Mashiach, there are many generations in between. There are many, many generations in between. We haven't got to Mashiach yet, so we're still along the path. The kula miot yoytim elu mi elu, k'moshal sheres haruka. Each of the generations come out one from the other like a long chain. Right, the present generation comes from the previous generation. The previous generation came from the generation before it. So it's just like links, the links, the rings which make up a chain. Asher tavui seat vukosu b'zu, where the rings are interlocked, they're attached to each other. Uba'ofen kazeh yesh doiris o yechidim. And therefore, because of this, you have generations. Because of this important element, so you have generations or you have individuals, shall be mishpat maseim enem ruim liskayim, that according to the strict law of their actions, based on their actions, they're not fitting to survive, they're not fitting to live, they don't really deserve to live, they don't deserve to be given life. I will be called mokum liskayim, however they are kept alive, not in their own merit, because they're very lowly people, they don't really have personal merit, rather on account of their fathers and their descendants. Right? You have a person who's really, he's not worthy himself, but because his grandfather was a great person, and because he's going to have a grandchild who will be a great person, so therefore he becomes the necessary link between the previous generations and the future generations. Right? We have the Avos HaKadoshim in the past. We have Mashiach in the future. And there's us in the middle, yeah? Smile for the camera. Okay? So therefore you have individuals who are just, their whole merit is because of their ancestors and their descendants. Ki adura zeh, so this generation could be a generation that have any personal merit, or these individuals, they're just like a ring in the chain which is to connect the two ends together. This gives them a reason to survive. This is a reason to keep them alive, to keep them going. Because without them, there will be no connection between the ancestors and the future generations. So it comes out that a person like this, who makes it in this world, he survives in this world, he makes it in this world. It could be that his whole survival is not because of himself. Person, he doesn't have any merit, but he will be kept alive and he is kept intact, because of this function of being one of the links in the chain. We find this, an example of this in the Gemara, as follows. Moshe Rabbeinu was told, Al teitzer es moyav. Do not hurt moyav. People of moyav came to antagonized the Jewish people. The Jewish people were still in the desert. They still had not come into Eretz Israel. And Moab came to cause them to sin. Like they set up their booths and they set up their daughters. And they created a whole prostitution ring and with idolatry and the whole business, the whole geschäft. And thousands of Jews lost their lives. Right? So therefore, the law should have been, you go and take justice against Moab. You go and destroy Moab. So Hashem said, don't hurt them. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, don't hurt them. Right? Because, let's see, Nosam Moshe Kal V'Chomer Be'atzmoy. Now, Moshe wanted to fight the Moabites. Hashem told him to take revenge from the Midianites. It was the Midianites together with the Moabites who came against the Jewish people. And he was told, go fight the Midianim, Midianites. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, if I have to fight the Midianites, all the more so I should fight the Moabites. They were more involved. They did us more harm than the Midianites. So it says here, Nosam Moshe Kal V'Chomer Be'atzmoy. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to learn from the one command to a logical extension of this. The Midianites just came to help the Moabites in opposing us. So therefore the Moabites all of also needed to be punished. If we need to punish the Midianites who just came to help the Moabites, certainly, all the more so we need to fight a war against the Moabites. That is what Moshe Rabbeinu was thinking, and that's what he wanted to do. And then Hashem came and said to him, no, leave them alone. Don't touch them. Don't touch them. Right? Omele HaKodesh Baruch Hu, said Hashem to Moshe, Lekesh Al Saldaitzcho. It's not like you're thinking Al Saldaitzcho. Not the way you're thinking is the way I'm thinking. Right? Your thoughts and my thoughts are very different. Right? Hashem's thoughts are often way beyond us, because he knows things we can't possibly know. I have two chicks that I have to still, two fledglings, two young doves that I have to still extract from the Moabites, right? Rus HaMoavia. Rus has to still come from the people of Moab. Ruth, right? The grandmother of Mashiach, the grandmother of David HaMelech. The Noma HaMoinis. And also Noma, the Ammonite, who I think married Shlomo. So she also was a big tzedekah. She's also part of the whole chain for the house of David and for the house of Mashiach. So these two individuals still have to be extracted from the nation of Moab. So Bishul Shtei Predus Chasakodesh Bochal Shtei Umos Gedolis Shel Roshoyim Uleichriva. It was on account of these two fledglings, of course, on account of these two individuals, these two young maidens, that Hashem had compassion on the two nations, the entire two nations, even though the whole nation was a nation of wicked people, right? And he didn't, right? The wicked people they didn't deserve to live. The Moabite nation, the Ammonite nation, deserved to be wiped out completely. They had really no merit at all. Hashem kept those two nations alive for generations. Because this was only generations later that Rus would be born and that Nama would be born. These nations were kept alive and intact. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't to touch them, because of these individuals who would eventually come from them. So here we have an example of exactly what we're saying. They're kept alive, they're allowed to survive because of this future. Here we have one of the explanations to understand the concept of a wicked person who flourishes. Sometimes you have a very wicked person, and he prospers. He's got money, he's got good health, he's got a beautiful family, he lives the good life, and he's a rotten person. But, you know, everything goes wonderfully for him, everything goes well for him. How could it be? It could be because of a certain individual that needs to come out of him, that he is prospering. So this is what we call the very lowest madrega of schus avos. Now, okay, that's one of the elements we have to understand. Again, what we're trying to understand is how Hashem treats us. Why are we treated as we are treated? Why do we see wicked people flourishing? Why do we see tzaddikim suffering? So this is one of the elements in the calculation. We have to know that this becomes part of the tapestry of our lives and of the world we live in. Perek Gimel, chapter 3 here. Another one of the concepts we need to understand the compassion that's shown to wicked people. Okay, so we spoke about one idea, the idea of the chain. We now have a further idea. Anyone who you find who lives a very, very pleasant life in this world, and he doesn't really deserve it according to the righteousness of his deeds. You find people live very, very pleasant lives, and they don't really deserve it. They're not very nice people. Really not very nice people. So we like to think of it, we naturally think it's Hashem's being kind to them. Hashem is being compassionate on them. However, okay, so that's not the right approach. If you see people prospering, even though they don't deserve it, just to say that's Hashem's compassion is not the right approach. Even though it appears to be because of compassion, sometimes it's not compassion at all. It's not compassion at all. And we have a verse that spells this out exactly, a frightening verse, which says, he pays his enemies up front to destroy them. He pays them in advance because he wants to get rid of them. He owes them a few pennies, so he gives them a pleasant life in this world, so that he can totally destroy them from eternity. If you look there in the Targum of that verse, the Targum says there, Shakodish Bokum Meshalim Schatev Lashoim Be'ad Mitzvisim Bo'ilam Azeh. Hashem pays a good reward to the wicked because of their mitzvahs in this world. They did a few mitzvahs in this world, so they get rewarded in this world. They have a very pleasant life. They have whatever, right? Like we mentioned, wealth and health and everything. In order to wipe them out from the world to come. They have no more credit. They use up their credit in this world, and then they can be destroyed from eternity. Now the question, the famous question on this idea is the following. Is this fair? Is this fair? Is it not enough that you're going to punish a wicked person because of all of his sins, all of his averas, which he transgressed, his transgressions? And you're also going to take away the little bit of reward from the mitzvahs which he has. Now, the mitzvah, the reward of a mitzvah really is something eternal. The reward for the mitzvah really is not, shouldn't be in this world. Now, we spoke about that, right? We spoke about before that the reward of a mitzvah is not in this world. It's beyond this world. Even the smallest mitzvah, the reward of even the smallest mitzvah is beyond this entire world. It's just too large for this. Can't even fit into this world. It's so large. So therefore, is it fair that you're going to pay him off in the reward of this world for his few mitzvahs? His mitzvahs are supposed to be eternity. So is this fair? This is the classic question. Is this fair that you're paying off the wicked people in this world and you're robbing them of their mitzvahs, which is really eternity? You're going to pay them off only in this world, which is just a world of vanity. It's a fog that rises. This whole world is just—it's a mist. It's a reality that lasts a few minutes, a couple of tens of years, and then it's gone. So therefore, is that fair that you're paying on them off in this world, when this world is just an illusionary world, a world that disappears so quickly? We know the reward of a mitzvah is not in this world. So therefore, how can he go and convert their mitzvahs into a payment in this world? Like, you, let's say you have a foreigner who comes into a country, right? And let's say an American comes to Israel and he's flashing $100 bills. Mm-hmm. And he says, can anyone help me change these to the local currency? And you say, yeah, well, that $10,000, that's 50 shekels. Here's 50 shekels for you. That's the right rate. Don't worry. That's fine. I'm giving you a fair price. You give me $10,000, I'll give you 50 shekels. And that's good. Okay. So that's not fair, you just cheated him, right? So the same thing, how can it be that the wicked people are paid off with prosperity in this world when that's really not a fair rate? You're not giving their value. This is the classical question. Now, in this idea, to explain this concept, there are a number of definitions we need. which even according to the smallness of our ability to understand, our own personal, our own ability to grasp, can be understood. Right? We're not going to understand the whole answer, because a lot of it's beyond us, but there are concepts we can grasp, we can understand, which will make sense to us. Right, so part of the answer we're going to understand, part of it will be left without understanding. That's really beyond human understanding. But the part that we can understand, we can spell out. Because it's impossible for a person to even imagine. It's ludicrous. In fact, it's just arrogance. The person could try to think that he can understand all of the secrets of Hashem and all the depth of the wisdom of Hashem, right? Which where Hashem's thoughts are very, very, very deep, right? We brought an example a few minutes ago. Even Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't see why he shouldn't fight Moab and Ammon, right? And even after we hear the answer, it sounds ridiculous. Well, you keep keeping millions of people alive just because of two young maidens who are going to come out. It also doesn't really make full sense to us. So therefore, it's preposterous to think that we're going to understand the whole thing. But there are certain ideas here that we can understand and which we should understand. Ach gam begidra mishpotev ha-ma'atim asher yesh lanu ktsas havona behem. The little bit that we can understand, where we have some insight, this will be enough for us to see that the ways of Hashem are true and straight. So we have an explanation here. We ask the question. We have an explanation here. This explanation will be enough for us to see that Hashem's ways are true, and Hashem's ways are straight and realistic, and this is how it should be. Hashem's rulings, His sentences, are all fair and true. We're going to mention a few of the concepts to make some sense of this question that we asked. And there'll be what to think about. The ideas we're going to mention here are definitely food for thought, and we should absorb them and think about them also during the day, during the week, during the year. Okay. So he starts off as follows. Aleph, yesh kama madregus bekiyum mitzvos u'maasim tovim. There are a number of different levels in terms of fulfilling mitzvahs and good deeds. Ach yesh behem shtei bechinas klaliyos. However, we have two general categories. Two people can do the same good act, but they're doing it at totally different levels. It can be totally different act. They're doing the same act, but they're all sorts of levels. However, in terms of our good deeds and our mitzvahs, there are two basic levels. There are two basic levels which have to be pointed out. And they are as follows. Number one, Hasuim L'Shem Shemaim, those deeds that we do for the sake of heaven. We're doing them for Hashem, B'Kavonus Halev L'Avoidus Hashem, with intention for the services of Hashem, L'Dovek B'Drochav HaKadoshim, in order to cleave to His holy ways. And Shtayim, number two, the second one is Kishem Asub Shalom Lishmo, or when the same deeds are done not for the sake of heaven. Or sometimes people do things because the deeds themselves are good and pleasant and straight. It appeals to us. Sometimes we do good deeds because they appeal to us. Right? You see often secular people, Goyim, also will do good deeds because it's pleasant. It's something it makes sense to them, and it's pleasant to do such things. Right? It's something that they see as being correct in their own eyes. It finds favor in our eyes, because of the good natures and the certain sense of straightness, the certain sense of justice that we have implanted in us. We all have, each person, every single person in the world has a sense of justice. We all have a sense of justice. Some people it's more developed, some people it's less developed, but everyone has a sense of what's fair and what's right and what's correct and how things should be. However, if a person is just doing it because he has a certain sense of justice or a certain sense of appreciation for beauty, whatever it is, that's not yet called that he's doing for the sake of the service of Hashem. So we're starting off we don't have time. We've run out of time now. We're starting off with our explanation of how it is that Hashem is going to pay off wicked people in this world. And our introduction to the topic is just the following idea, that the good deeds we do and the mitzvahs we do fall into two basic categories, and that is there are those who do the mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim for the sake of Hashem, or for the sake of serving Hashem as a mitzvah, because Hashem has commanded us, that's why we're doing it. We're doing it in His service. And as He's asked us to do something, and we're doing it because He asked us. Or the second category is people who do it not. They do it because it's pleasant to them, it makes sense to them, it's something they feel like doing. I feel like, you know, I feel like giving $1 million to Tzedakah. So I feel like it. So he's doing it. It's also a very nice act, a very noble act, but he does it not for the sake of serving Hashem, but he does it because it's something that's pleasant to him, something that makes sense to him. Or it could be even, he knows it's a mitzvah of Hashem, he does it not for the right intention. He does it not for the sake of Hashem. So that would be the second category. This we're still going to have to explain, please God, in the next class.